people confuse this whole tiny habits thing with the truth. The truth is, you have to make some big fundamental decisions and invest while you're motivated. I'm going to quit this job, or I'm going to move my office headquarters so I can walk to work every day. That's a big choice.
Dr. Jason Lankhire brings an unusual blend of medical and entrepreneurial experience to his role as CEO of Zipongo. He'll need to use it all if he's to achieve his goal of making us eat, shop, and live a little bit healthier.
This is Tectonics, the podcast focused on the people and passion at the intersection of technology and health. I'm Lisa Soonan.
And I'm David Shewitz. All righty. Hey, Lisa. Hey, great to be here again.
Nice to see you, David.
All righty. So I was excited by the recent news that 23andMe has recruited former Genentech R&D exec Richard Scheller to start an internal drug development division, which I assume will be focused on target ID and validation. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, they've been out there being sort of the collector of consumer data and the advocate for the consumer, and now they're going to turn into a drug company, and I wonder what that will do to their relationship with consumers, which by and large don't love drug companies. So it'll be interesting to see if that changes things.
Right, and so my understanding is you're from our Twitter exchange is that you thought that it might make people less likely to sign on with 23andMe?
I don't know if it'll make them less likely, but I think it'll make people, some people, not all people, but I think it'll make some people think that if they're going to donate their data, that they should financially benefit from what comes out of it financially. You know, if you create a drug using my data and you make $80 billion, should I maybe get a piece of that action for having facilitated it?
Yeah, and I think my sense is that there are so many people who are just hoping to have someone work on a drug, and for them or for their or for their kids or for their grandkids, the idea that, oh my goodness, if someone could come up with something, if they could, for Alzheimer's, for Parkinson's, for something, that in itself would be something they would really be excited about contributing to.
I'm sure that's true to a certain extent. But then, you know, if it's a VC contributing their data, they're going to want to see the profit from it, right? They can't help themselves.
Well, so we will continue this. Meanwhile, so we are particularly excited today to have a special guest, Jason Lankhire from Zipongo. So in 1996, while a freshman at Williams College, Jason got a call from his mom that his 15-year-old sister was pregnant by his best friend. By 2000, Jason was awarded the Herschel Smith Fellowship to continue his neuroscience research at Cambridge. But after talking with his family about their financial struggles, he instead got a job as a strategy consultant in order to support his family. While Jason eventually returned to school for an MD and an MPH, he has continued to stray from the usual path to help people. He started a wellness program for school kids in North Carolina that grew to 5 states, set up a weight management clinic for inner city children in Boston, and co-founded and eventually sold a company to help cancer patients make better decisions. Today, Jason is founder and CEO of Zipongo, a San Francisco startup focused on personalized and actionable daily recommendations for people struggling, as I think we all are, to live healthier lives. Their tagline is "Eating Well Made Simple." We're excited that he's with us today and hope that he gives us some clues on how to do this.
Yeah, really. It's good to see you, Jason.
Great
Thanks
to be with
so
you
much
guys.
For coming in. And, you know, you've had such an interesting and eclectic background, although with a theme around healthcare, obviously. What is the theme or sort of sense of consciousness that propelled you from where you started to how you got to here? You know, is there something that drives you, a common theme through that?
I think we can all blame our parents for what we ultimately become.
I certainly do.
Yeah. It's interesting,
and my kids are well underway to that.
Exactly. I'm the firstborn in a family of four. I have three younger sisters, and of course they picked the name Jason for me. And it wasn't long, and I think I could like speak, and they were like, you know, Jason means healer. So that was kind of an early indication that like you better be a doctor. But I'm exaggerating. They never put that kind of implicit pressure on. But my mother. Actually was a dental assistant, she had always aspired to be a doctor. She even thought about going to the military, but that wasn't really kind of the way it was done back then. And my father was a mechanic, and he also loved fixing things. So I think that we really focused on how we could help people and find solutions to common problems.
So one of the things that I remember you discussing was that one of your really first introductions to health management was some of the experiences with your mom and weight loss clinics. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so one of the struggles that my mom had her whole life was being overweight. And as a 10-year-old kid, I remember my mom dragging me to something called Diet Workshop, which is kind of similar to Weight Watchers.
I remember that.
So you can imagine like being a 10-year-old kid amongst a lot of women who are kind of lamenting about all the things that are going wrong with, you know, eating and, frankly, their lives, because these were sessions more about the stress that caused people to overeat. And, you know, this was really hard for my mom, so it was a really kind of personal issue that I got to see firsthand. And then my sister ended up having anorexia, one of them, and my other sister really struggled with weight and bulimia. And so from a really young age, I was exposed to kind of a lot of eating issues. And you mentioned 23andMe, and I actually think it's really interesting that I have a gene on my 23andMe which says that I have an overeating disorder, but it only affects the females. So my sisters actually have some of these. And then what's also interesting is that I have a gene for low adiponectin levels, which leads to overeating. But good thing my parents also got me involved in sports.
Yeah, I mean, like it's like BMI is like 15 or something. So it's like
I know.
Lisa and I look on enviously.
So you worked mostly, I think, or often with kids early on, right? I mean, now you're really more focused on the adult population and what you do now, but you were a pediatric endocrinologist, as I recall, or in that field and area.
Yeah, so I focused a lot in pediatrics. I actually had a slot for residency at UCSF, and I actually give Dan West and the crew there a lot of credit because, you know, they hadn't done the official match yet, but I sat down with them and said, you know, I have an opportunity to have funding for Zipongo, but I also really want to be a clinician. Do you think there'll be an opportunity to come back later in life? I know that's not the traditional path. And, you know, Dan said, you know, there aren't that many people that have engineering background, startup experience, and, you know, medical training, and you really care about kind of prevention of disease, and it all starts with kids. So I'd rather see you out in the world doing Zipongo, and there'll always be a door open when you come back. And so I think, You don't think of the medical system encouraging people like that, but I got a lot of like really good support in that area.
Do you ever think about going back?
I think I will go back someday. Yeah. It's everybody says the odds are against that, and I can understand why. But honestly, after running three companies, especially the last one, I think neurosurgery is easier than a startup.
Well, but I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, you talk about taking on challenges. I mean, what I want to know is how do you go when you know you have this experience where you're helping you know, bring fitness, like you're saying, to school kids in Durham, right? And then your experience with the inner city children in Boston. How do you look at a problem that seems to be just sort of so enormous and so, you know, whatever you might do, it seems like such a intrinsically small part of such an incredibly large, even as you were describing it with your mom, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, you know, yes, the weight is part of it, but there's these deep social issues. There's a huge number of life stressors. How do you look at that and say, oh, this is a solvable problem?
Sure. It is a really big problem. But I think of what Google and the search engine industry did to make libraries very different than they are today, in combination with the internet being made available to the public. And when it was back in 2002, you know, taking all that kind of experience from my own family and then seeing these kids come through the door, you know, doctors would try to tackle this from the standpoint of, all right, let's check your fasting glucose levels and, you know, let's then give you the, you know, food guide pyramid and go home and hope you'll listen to what we had to say. And shocker, it didn't really work. But then when we actually took a little extra time and said, hey, what kind of food do you like and what totally grosses you out? You know, kids actually would fess up and say, I actually really like strawberries. And I cannot stand celery or XYZ. It's really simple, human. And by asking those questions, we were able to go down a path of creating these really personalized plans that people would follow. But doctors, you know, didn't have the time, they didn't get reimbursed for it, and they said that they weren't trained to do it. So they had a lot of difficulty in thinking how they would actually, you know, scale that. But, you know, that was an impetus for me to say, if, you know, Amazon can personalize book recommendations, if we can get digital prescriptions of drugs nailed down with Walgreens, why can't the two come together so that physicians can give personalized prescriptions for healthy eating? But that was 2002. I was naive. I had no startup experience. And by the way, the data sets weren't really available. So the quote unquote internet for this industry hadn't been released. But years later, we're now in an era where there's Facebook, where there is, you know, Google Maps, where there is mass release of data sets, where we had an ability to plug into 25,000 grocery stores worth of data. That didn't exist in 2002, and I didn't know what I was doing. Now, I've made a ton of mistakes through a lot of startups, and all that data is available, and there's an opportunity to try to help people with every single food decision in the same way that Google helps people with every single question that they have about information.
But if you think about kids, and I think it's particularly about places like North Carolina, or at least the rural areas, or even the rural areas of California for that matter, there's so much more to it than just having the knowledge, right? There's also having access, there's having parental guidance and support. You know, it's fine for a kid to be told to eat well when the parents eat crap, you know.
And like food deserts,
you know. How do you account for that?
Yeah, it's a hard problem. And you started earlier, Lisa, by asking, you know, you're focused on adults now, but have never left kind of the vision of helping kids fundamentally and families in general. So I'll tell you a couple stories. When we started Fitness Forward, we started off with a program called the Coach K Drive to Fitness. And kids...
Tell people who Coach K is if they're just of the uninitiated.
You know, best basketball team in the NCAA, of course.
We're about to get the March Madness results today, I think. Yeah, the bids today, right?
So when I was at Duke Medical School, Coach K is still the coach for the Duke Blue Devils. Hated by many and loved and adored by others.
Once again, I'll say go Bears.
But Coach
Harvard
is
made the tournament this year.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's the scorers. They're going to do the math, right?
So Coach is a great guy. And we started, again, really simply by having kids earn points for different healthy behaviors. An hour more of physical activity, hour less of TV time, no sugar beverages, 5 to 9 fruits and vegetables, 8 to 11 hours of sleep. And the classroom teachers gave them these scorecards. They also had an online tracking tool they could use with their parents. And the reason parts of it worked were because, just like the Book It program where you kind of get, you know, points for reading books, they would take this back with their families, and then their parents would want the kids to earn the rewards. So they'd say, go do more physical activity. They'd say, you know, we're going to get you to bed earlier. We'll give you more fruits and vegetables. But when it came to, for example, less sugar added beverages, didn't work. So we had statistically significant results, the physical activity change, for example, on the one hand. But the reason it didn't work with the sodas is because the parents kept buying them for themselves. And at the end of the day, human beings are pretty simple. They want to be healthy. And it's actually pretty easy to artificially externally motivate them. And it's also possible to motivate ourselves with information like, oh, I'm going to be sick, or I am sick, or my loved one wants me to do something.
But do you think that a business about like the people intrinsically want to be healthy, that's true? I think that when people are consciously thinking about it, they're like, oh, I want to be healthy. But then you have, I don't know how many years of evolution in case I run into a, not being able to get any food, I want to pack as much on my body as I can. And you have all
that's
of
right.
human evolution fighting against starvation. And then you have a little bit of occasional good intention saying, oh yeah, I'd really rather be healthy if everything else is aligned in the universe.
Exactly. And that's the rub. That's why we were able to change doing more of something like physical activity or even more fruits and vegetables. But when it came to, say, less sugar added beverages, the kids actually wanted to do it, but they couldn't control themselves because in the refrigerator and in the cupboards was the soda and the modeling from their parents saying,
and Twinkies are delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the number one learning, both in my own experiences and also has become very apparent in the literature, if you've seen books from on like Nudge and Brian Wansick on mindless eating, the reality of food is that only 17% of people can maintain a 10% weight loss for a year in the country. And the tracking programs where you track your food, the rewards programs, the incentive programs, and the population level average diets don't work for long-term behavior change and weight outcomes. But what does work in the literature very clearly, and in my own experience, is that when people, and then especially families, when it comes to kids, make fundamental changes to their environment, like we're going to put fruits and vegetables on the top racks of the refrigerator, we're going to remove all sodas from the household, period. We are going to change the cupboards. we're going to change the store where we buy food. Those are the families. Those are the people that have long-term changes in their lives. And you can even track that with physical activity. If you buy a treadmill desk and you put it in your home and your work, and then you get into the habit over the course of a couple of weeks, you will lose weight. You move closer to work and you walk every day, you will lose weight, and you will always have that weight maintained off. So the rules are quite simple. And you know, when we think now about Zipongo, we're actually really trying to help families, inclusive of kids, and we're helping these employers and health plans with, you know, everybody, including dependents, which are the fastest source of growth in healthcare costs.
You know, it's so interesting. I mean, when you talk, it sounds so logical and all that. And I am one of those people that knows a lot about healthcare, like all of us do. And, you know, I know all of these things intellectually, and I can wake up in the morning and say to myself, I'm going to have a healthy day and I'm going to eat well and exercise.
Yep.
And then halfway through the pint of ice cream, I go, shit, what am I doing? Yep. You know? So, you know, how do you get people to be, you know, persistent and cognizant? You said it was easy to motivate people. I don't agree with that. I think it's hard to motivate people, and it's hard to keep people constantly cognizant, you know, and making, because it's so interesting. It feels so different than, food feels so different than like all of the other wellness stuff to me, right?
Yep.
You can't not eat. You can't, yep, stop eating. It's
exactly
not like a smoking program, right?
Yep.
So finding that optimal balance is, I think, really challenging for people.
Yeah, I'd say two things. So first, let me address your point about motivation. So to refine what I was saying, I think it is very easy to motivate people temporarily. And the evidence would suggest that's very true. There's all kinds of things I could do to get you really fired up. And I wouldn't have to do much because you're already interested in like being healthy. We're all interested in being healthy at baseline. Then there's things we can do, like give you, and it's a different price point for a different level of income, $100, $1,000, whatever. Could make you like do something differently in a day. You get a bad result and it reminds you, not like you didn't know already, but it reminds you, oh crap, like my LDL is through the roof, my cholesterol, and I need to do something about it. And that happens once a year with the doctor, or it's January. Everybody else is thinking about a New Year's resolution. I'm thinking about it. So what we have learned is that everyone, without exception, is motivated at points throughout the year. The problem with most health and wellness is that it expects people to be motivated all the time, or it pretends to think that gamification or social or you know, the use of dollar incentives will constantly keep people motivated, and that will somehow be enough. But the truth is, to get to your point, the only thing that's enough is when people are motivated, those short windows of the year, that people make big decisions. And people confuse this whole tiny habits thing with the truth. The truth is, you have to make some big fundamental decisions and invest while you're motivated in making a big change in your environment. Buying a treadmill disc, that's like a weird thing to do, but you have to do it, right? I'm going to quit this job, or I'm going to move my office headquarters so I can walk to work every day. That's a big choice. I'm going to start shopping at Whole Foods every day. It's a big change because I don't want to be exposed to all the advertising in my typical store. But once you make that choice, it's not like then overnight you change everything you eat. You don't. You then make a bunch of small changes, and you're still motivated for a couple of weeks. And then 6 weeks later, you're not motivated at all anymore because you're stressed out by your job. Something went wrong with your family. And all you want to do is have that ice cream or watch that TV show to not think about the things that are stressing you out, because they're
drugs.
And
they sell ice cream at Whole Foods, goddammit.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. What
it.
The heck? So what is powerful about, I think, what we're doing, which is a little different, is that if you make all of the actions easy, then people do it more easily. So Google makes the action of searching information easier. You don't have to drive to the library. Amazon makes it so easy to buy whatever you want with a click. And when they make a personalized recommendation for something to buy, like a book, all you have to do is click once. Pandora, you flip the song to the next song if you're not happy with the first one. And most of health and wellness is content. And even if you personalize the content, like eat more of this, do less of this, it's like, usually. Or if it's a non-obvious thing, it's still like, well, five other things might intervene before I get to do that thing. And you haven't restructured the default behaviors in your life. So
that's what it sounds like. It sounds like you're trying to kind of like restructure people's default environment.
That's right. Yeah,
but it's still hard to imagine it, that it's going to be easier to sort of exercise vigorously for half an hour each day than it is to click on Amazon or click on, you know, or to do a search. But I mean, I can appreciate.
But you can do one-handed while you're eating ice cream with the other.
I don't want to know how you do one-handed while you're on the internet, Lisa.
Fair enough. One of the things I always struggle with is, you know, you watch, on the one hand, you watch Michelle Obama.
Yep.
You know, doing Let's Get Healthy and Dancing with Ellen for, you know, to promote exercise and in growing vegetables on the White House lawn or whatever and promoting that in a public way, which is great. And at the same time, the same, you know, government is funding hydrogenated corn oil, you know, growth in Iowa and places like that, food subsidies that go right into, you know, Coca-Cola. And
all right, we believe you went to Berkeley. We got
yeah, right,
it.
Yeah, right, I know. And, you know, how does that, and then translates all the way down to you're at home and you've got your newly changed environment and everything you see on TV is Kentucky Fried Chicken. You know, how do you, as a human being, yep. navigate between, you know, that health sort of zeitgeist, but the constant pressure, you know, and surroundings we have?
Yep. Yep. So I think that ties together kind of two threads you guys just talked about. One, David, you talked about physical activity, and it is pretty hard to kind of do that unless you, again, change your default behaviors and you put up the treadmill desk, you move closer to work, and you incorporate the physical activity in as a necessary part of your commute or something like that. Right. It's the only thing that people really are able to adopt, or big social pressure to do it. But what's the good news, in part, is that at the beginning of your journey, for example, for weight loss or changing your cholesterol level, your fasting glucose level, food is about 75% of the contribution. And it's the only thing that has ever been shown to get you through that initiation phase of making a change. Interestingly enough, the people who maintain a weight loss, for example, they do have to incorporate physical activity, but just like stable movement, but not at the beginning. But food changes are necessary regardless. Which then kind of comes to your point, Lisa, which is then, well, how do you overcome what at the end of the day was driven by food subsidies of corn and a lot of other things, the incredibly plentiful kind of source of low quality calories, and fundamentally the marketing that goes behind those because of the economic society we live in, which demands growth and growth of all of those companies that sell those things. But here's what I'd say are some bright spots and some of our strategy at Zipongo for how to deal with this. You know, part of Zipongo is, of course, helping people make those everyday
decisions.
Tell
people what Zipongo is, because not everybody knows.
Sure. So eating well made simple, but at the end of the day, we help large employers that are self-insured and health plans help their people eat healthier. And we have two core product modules. You know, one is food at home, the other is food at work. Food at home gives you a dietary assessment. And coming out of that dietary assessment, where we learn a ton about your food preferences, but we also know your baseline nutritional status. It's quick, it's 5 minutes, and you do it during your biometric screening at work or at home. And that turns into a personalized meal plan, just like a dietitian would give you. But one of the best dietitians, the ones that actually would take the time with you to think about what kind of food do you like, what kind of food do you not like, instead of just saying, you're diabetic, here's the diabetic diet, eat cottage cheese for breakfast every morning, as if you right. would do that. But the key thing is that that meal plan connects to recipes that are personalized for your preferences, connected to, you know, then the grocery lists that are necessary for you, that connects to then food discounts if you're below a certain income status at all the grocery stores in the U.S., and we can give cash back for buying healthy food. And then if you work at a place like Microsoft, then you, when you come into the cafe, you get a recommendation from us that's pushed to your phone, and we create a little mini menu, like a prefix menu instead of the Cheesecake Factory menu. And we say, here's one of two, three things that you might like. You still get choice, but not too much choice. And then you can go. And we've essentially reconstructed your food environment by doing that every day. And that's the one piece. But when you still get back to those policy issues, Lisa, we now are forming a global relationship, and we have multiple relationships with the food service vendors that, you know, serve food to all these people. And as we start to get integrated with all the point-of-sale systems for example, 135 million customers of one of our new partners, and we become that new mini menu that people use, we have effectively kind of gotten in the way of that advertising. And so when people sign up for Zipongo, you're no longer going to these other sources.
So does that, for those, so I know you work directly with a lot of grocery store companies, for instance, and some very, very large ones. But Are they schizophrenic about it? I mean, aren't you basically telling their customers don't go into the aisles, just stay on the perimeter of the store? I mean, do they treat you that way? Are they schizophrenic about it? How do they feel? Can you tell a story about, you know, that sort of engagement with the grocery organizations?
They're definitely conflicted, and I think it's very challenging. A quick story, in the early days when we were experimenting with different things would actually work for end users, we had kind of a Groupon for groceries module, healthy groceries module. And so naturally the people that would pay the bills in that would be the people who wanted to promote the food, like General Mills and others. But candidly, while a lot of those companies have a lot of good products now that they own, the older products that command most of the marketing dollars and which are very powerful in those companies had a very difficult time grappling with the fact that their product would not be a green zone product. It would be yellow or red in our system. And that would create a fundamental conflict. So in engineering Zipongo as a business, we've had to be very careful to make sure that the business model aligns with the actual mission. And that's why ultimately we aligned on focusing on selling our services to employers and health plans who stand to gain from there being improvement in health outcomes.
Do you ever have moments where you slip yourself, where you're, I mean, you know, we're interviewing you, you look completely fit and, you know, sort of an advertisement for what you're describing. But as a human being, I mean, do you ever have moments where you just sort of want the Ben and Jerry's or don't exercise for a day or, you know, where you just...
All the time, especially with a one-year-old.
Yeah, right. It's pretty fun to feed them a cake or, you know, on their first birthday or the things that you're not supposed to do, right?
Well, just, I was thinking more in terms of a kid, just the loss, I mean, the messed up sleep-wake cycle, and you're just, you know, you're not always on your top game when you're just exhausted all the time. And yet dealing with that, and I can, you know, it's an understandable thing. Well, let me just treat myself. Or how do you kind of not self, how do you get past basically self-medicating with food?
Yeah. Quick sidebar with Davis, my son, my parents came to visit and I was like, I know they're going to slip up. I know it. And the whole week went great. And then the second to last day, my dad took my wife aside, Louise, and said, I got to confess, we took Davis to Ghirardelli's and we gave him ice cream. Don't tell Jay. She's like, well, I have to tell him. And so, yeah, so it happens, but we did not give him chocolate cake. But to David's point, you know, starting a company and running a company is incredibly stressful. I'm not going to lie to you.
You said earlier, one thing you said I want to pick up on is you said you made lots of mistakes. Yeah. So what was the biggest mistake you made and how is it different now for you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, so many. I don't know if I can pluck that out of the top of my head, but I think, you know, one of the mistakes with my last for-profit company that I co-founded with a, you know, really amazing guy, used to be the CEO of Duke Health System, was that we ran it like a big company, raised a fair amount of money, and we really didn't use an agile approach. That's kind of a lame thing. I don't know if it's embarrassing. You know, we just made a lot of mistakes about how we, you got really hungry people who are incredibly creative on the day-to-day, whereas Zipongo, I think we started very lean. Now we're actually going through the transition of being a much larger company. But from the stress standpoint about slipping up, David, I think getting back to the earlier point, like shifting your default behavioral economics is everything. In fact, I had a discussion with my wife the other day. I said, yeah, I noticed you're buying those oatmeal packets with the high sugar in them, the instant oatmeal. I was like, we got to go back to just getting the regular oatmeal because I won't be able to stop myself from eating these when I'm kind of a really stressed version of me. And she's like, yeah, no problem. But what's even cooler is now Zipongo has a new version of its application, which is coming out soon, where you can connect the grocery list that's recommended to a home delivery grocery order in 15 states. So I'm already starting to beta test that and use that. And that's already made an amazing difference for our family. And it's gotten so personalized and so tweaked to the point now where literally my wife or I just hit the button and our Instacart or Amazon or Safeway order just comes.
Well, I'm going to be curious what happens when your kid gets to be not one, but three or four or five, and you're trying to get them to eat anything. I mean, there's a real tension between what you might imagine in an ideal world one's kid would eat and what they're actually willing to eat. So
I was thinking about when his kid goes to college, instead of going crazy on drugs, he's going to go crazy on ice cream and cookies. what is that you're doing differently now? You know, building Zipongo, which, by the way, where's that name come from, Zipongo?
Yeah, what's
up with
that?
It's a silly name.
I wish it was my dog's name. It'd be an easier explanation. But we used to be called FitNet, and we found that we only attracted people who were like triathletes
already
and
fit.
Interested in losing weight for a wedding, mm-hmm. as opposed to people who, you know, really struggling with diabetes or other problems. So we changed the name to Zipongo.
That nobody understands.
Yeah, nobody understands. It can mean anything. It's just like energy in life. Zip, go.
Oh, okay.
Just feels good. Rolls off the tongue. Sounds like bongos in the jungle.
Got it. So what is it that you're doing differently now? What was the great light bulb moment for you that turned this company into a growth engine that you've now achieved? I mean, it started off slowly, I know, and mm-hmm. it's all of a sudden now you're taking off. What was the thing? What was the magic?
You know, Chris Dixon, who's one of our investors through Founder Collective, more through Katarina Fake, but he wrote about the importance of founder market fit. And, you know, I think the key is that I was trying to be something that I wasn't and build a team that was something that wasn't really my experience set with consumer at the beginning. But I know the healthcare system. I know self-insured employers and health plans. And at the end of the day, the mission that we have and the business model that works for those kind of companies, while complicated and slower than I'd like it to be, it fits. So I like to solve complex problems. I'm not kind of a one and done, kind of a quick B2C startup kind of guy. And when we just stepped back and said, let's just do the blocking and tackling, knowing it's going to be hard to work with large self-insured employers like Google and health plans like Independent Health, Blue Cross Blue Shield South Carolina, then things started to really get rolling.
So just before we wrap up, I imagine people who are listening may have the same reaction that I have, which is, oh, this sounds really good. Can consumers still sign up directly, or is the idea you need to get your employer to sign up for it?
Yeah, there's a free version, and big shout out and thanks to Apple. We've been featured as the first app on the food and nutrition kind of well-being part of the App Store for the last couple of weeks, which has been great. And you can get the app, and it'll help you with your groceries, recipes, discounts from all the grocery stores across the United States. That's a basic version. You get a lot more with have it from your employer, your health plan, but please definitely check it out and give us feedback.
All right. Well, this is inspiring. Maybe I won't celebrate Dairy Queen, right? No, really, just terrific stuff. We're so grateful to have you on. Thanks for coming
by. Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.